This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins along with Chris Novembrino. I am going to start with news about me. Quick health update. I am officially cancer-free. Very happy and humbled by all the support I had these past few months. Feel a little... Chris, I don't know about you, but when you hear, I mean, I will never be that guy who goes, I'm a cancer survivor, unless it's, of course, it's for comedy for this podcast, because I didn't go through like weeks of chemotherapy, you know, and ringing a bell and things like that. It feels more like having skin cancer than anything. And those people can't call that, but nevertheless, good health news for me. That's how I'm going to leave it as.
That's great. That's really good. I mean, yeah.
Part of me though was going, man, you know, if I get chemo, I could get rid of all this body hair. not to belittle people who have to go through this stuff. It was just one of those things where it's like, what am I gonna have to go through or whatnot? Chris has a heart out, so we need to get going here. Starting with the news, John Moxley, as we said at the end of last week, Shake Them Ropes. A little bit more details, but he has re-signed with AEW for 5 years. In his contract, no more indie dates. Thus, the reason he did not drop the title. Did he have the GCW title? I don't remember, but basically, he won't be doing GCW or Defy or places like that anymore. Just their foreign partners like New Japan. So he has that in there, but 5-year contract, and Moxley was working on kind of a handshake deal for the past couple months. He could have appeared at WWE if he was sick of all the crap with Punk and whatnot. But your thoughts on this, Chris?
I mean, I think that the man should get paid, and I think it's good to pay the man. He's been the anchor for that company.
Here's my question: is he the ace now of the company, as opposed to say? Oh, I don't know, one of the guys sitting at home, or Hangman, or yes. Brian Danielson, or something like that. Is he now the guy?
If they had, you know, Danielson, I guess, is like a wear and tear sort of issue. Like, you know, there's concerns about, like, can he, like, hold up? If Danielson was in better shape, he'd be the ace for this company. Like not based off a presentation or whatever, just like an all around who can be the best wrestler in this company. Like the most talented guy is Danielson.
Okay.
But Moxley's the guy. I'll finish the thought here. Moxley's the guy who has the hearts of the crowd and has been presented the most strongly and consistently.
When I say ace, I don't necessarily mean the best wrestler. I mean the guy that you put at the center of all your advertising and you say, this is our main star here. Not that Kenny isn't a main star or anything like that, but it's one of those things where, I mean, who has been the face of AEW? That, and I don't know if there's a definitive answer for that.
No. And right now, the way the show is being done, it almost feels like MJF is the face of AEW, and that is sort of like, it's an interesting question of like, do you want this guy to be like the face of the company?
Yeah, do you do like AEW starring John Moxley, much like, you know, a Cena or a Roman Reigns type thing? I know we don't like doing the one-to-one comparisons of companies because it's like, well, AEW should be the brand because it's the best wrestling. Well, wrestling doesn't work like that always, and it's very usually very centered around who you're top guy holding the top belt is. I mean up until the last 20 years, that's how it always was, and it still is in some ways.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I didn't have anything.
Also signing with AEW, his wife Renee Paquette. Now, this was a signing on the Dynamite show that I do over on Fight Game Media. I had to be talked into because I had first said, well, what's the use of this? Because while she's very likable and while people you know, wrestling fans really like her perkiness and stuff like that. I went, well, AEW has a lot of announcers that they're not using, for lack of a better term. Or they have a lot of, they have a bloated roster of announcing talent on here with Lexi Nair and Alex Marvez and Shivani and Paul White and Mark Henry and occasionally Golden Boy and, you know, and Ian Riccaboni's coming in and all these, and it gets lost in the shuffle. But, yeah, according to what my co-host there was saying, it's like, well, she brings a certain energy that the other, like, just males don't have, and a certain gravitas that, like, Lexi Nair doesn't have, and she'll be good on panel shows. And my thinking was, with this next story that I'll be bringing up about Discovery, I always viewed her as more of a morning show host in terms of, like, local television or like, something like an Entertainment Tonight type of quote-unquote journalist, if you wanted to do it. I just didn't see wrestling her bringing a lot to the table, because you can't, but she can't really bring personality to wrestling per se, because it's usually about the wrestlers. If it was about her, kind of like, I don't know if you know who, do you know who Maria Taylor is, if I said that?
No.
Name? Okay, well, a little bit of background. Maria Taylor was a host at ESPN, and she wanted to do the NBA finals, and there was a big political struggle, including leaked audio, and she ended up in a bidding war, and NBC bought her, and she's now on the Sunday Night Football show for NBC, but all she really does is throw it to the coaches or throw it to the people at the field. She's not really her value to what she brings to the show in terms of Maria Taylor, to me, is overvalued. And that's what I was thinking for Renee Paquette, but I am perfectly willing to be wrong here. Is this a great hire for AEW, Chris?
The stuff that Renee did best on WWE television, there isn't a real clean analog for with AEW television. Like, there's not like a talking smack. Cause that's what she was really good at. She was very comfortable, like, basically doing like improv with the wrestlers as like an interview show.
As long as it was light. When it got dark, it got a little bit uncomfortable with Renee at times, I thought. But okay, I will let you hold that thought for a second, because I'll read this next story. Kathleen Finch, the chairwoman and chief content officer for Warner Brothers Discovery, made what sounds like a major vote of confidence for AEW in a Hollywood Reporter interview. This is Dave Meltzer writing in the Wrestling Observer. She said they are looking at doing 4,000 hours of original content for their U.S. networks and are looking for new scripted series for TBS and TNT, as well as a new sports franchise that would work on those stations. She said, quote, "We really play in the sports space. One of the things that we're doing around sports is creating shoulder programming to hold on to those fans. AEW pulls huge numbers, so we are working with the wrestling team to figure out what new kind of content we can build that's not in a wrestling ring." Now, hearing that, does this make it a better thing for Renee, who did plenty of these types of shows for the WWE Network?
Because, like, what when you say that, what I think is, like, tough enough AEW edition.
Okay. I was saying, you know, she had that weird celebrity interview show where she was getting coffee with people that she did for a little while on I believe it was on the WWE Network, and maybe it was Peacock. I can't remember if it was that long ago. But I mean, I'm more open to it, I think. I still think in the world of broadcasters like her, I thought Charlie Caruso was a little on the stronger side, to be honest with you, but she's more of a straight reporter versus a personality type. Like, I could see her doing basically what Jim Ross does now with the backs with the sit down interview type things. I think she'd be good at that.
Yeah, and I think, like, especially as a foil for heels, where it's, or like, she's almost like the female Tony Schiavone, where it's like everybody loves Tony, and like, yeah, when someone doesn't like Tony, that means they're a real dick. Like Renee can maybe occupy that role.
Okay, yeah, I've warmed up to it a bit, and I think, I mean, and look, we know Discovery Plus loves repeatable, disposable entertainment that they could just put on there. I mean, it's one of those things, if you put on any Discovery Network, it's the same show 30 times a day. So it's going to be interesting what they do with all that. And I know a lot of people are in up in arms about like the animation studios being consolidated and the tax write-offs of certain projects and stuff. Let's just say jury's still out. Anyways, regarding the situation with those suspended over the fight, this is the fight at AEW's, is it All Out or Full Gear? I can't remember anymore. Whatever.
It was All Out.
Thank you. CM Punk, the Young Bucks, Ace Steel, and Kenny Omega. None of the five have heard anything from AEW, Chris.
We're like nearly a month out now, right?
Oh, at least.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry, but like, there's not that much to investigate about the incident. It maybe lasted upwards of 20 minutes in total. The actual dust up probably lasted under 5 to 10 minutes.
Chris, I got a theory. They can't decide who to punish.
Yep.
Because they are really weighing, okay, if we tick off this side, then this side's going to leave. If we tick off this side, this other side's going to leave. Oh, how do we split this baby, Solomon? Because we just signed John Moxley to a giant contract, but we don't want the Bucks and Omega leaving to go to WWE necessarily. And we don't necessarily want Punk to leave and then badmouth us, because you know, as soon as Punk gets released, he's going on somebody's show to trash everybody.
Right? Yeah, he's gonna the Colt Cabana podcast about AEW is gonna get mondo. Well, no, of course. Like,
no, I'm just laughing at the Colt Cabana part of it.
Right. Well, yeah. Obviously, we won't be using his platform, I don't think, this time around, but. Yeah, like, you know, you think about what that Colt Cabana podcast did in terms of, like, podcasting numbers. Yes. in that era. I mean, it did stunning. Like, Punk is a massive ratings mover whenever he has, he always does. He always makes numbers, man.
It got, like, ESPN coverage. It got, you know, it got mainstream. The podcast got mainstream coverage from sports outlets and stuff because everybody loved Punk and everybody loved the summer of Punk. And God knows Tony Khan, especially given this week with Ariel Helwani and that whole fallout, which we're not going to get into. Go listen to Flagship. They had a very good breakdown of everything with that. But look, he doesn't want Punk going on Ariel Helwani and trashing AEW. So, yeah, I think... Look, don't get me wrong.
No, beyond. Okay, so like, I know going into the Helwani interview like because other people have done it better or whatever. I guess my only thought is...
If you want.
No, just like minor. It was just confirmation more so that like Tony Khan is not a guy who has a lot of answers right now. And that's a big problem as more and more questions start to pile up.
Yes.
And yeah, he just does, you know, there are any number of other issues in that interview. But like, dude, at a certain point, like people are going to start to question you. If you keep going public and you're not able to answer things in a lucid way.
Right. And it's not that, you know, like Triple H doesn't have questions he needs to answer. I thought, again, I'm going to plug the Flagship as if it needs plugging from us, but I think both Joe and Rich came up, you know.
No, it's a good little show over there, Jeff. They do a good work. I would love for more people to check them out.
Yeah, but you know, there were certain follow-up questions that any journalist could ask Triple H about, you know, Vince McMahon getting ousted and stuff like that. And look, Tony, there's probably still some legal ramifications that they need to get through in terms of employee-employer relationship and perhaps executive type of compensation type of things. If they were going to do something as drastic as, say, fire the Young Bucks and Kenny, I'm not saying they're going to, but if they're going to cut everybody loose, then it's much easier to cut loose Punk than it is the officers of the company. And there might still be some talking with legal about, okay, what can we do? What can't we do and not get sued over it? So,
but yeah, like as an interviewer, right? Like this and Andrade and Sammy and the through line of those things over the last 6 weeks here, that is the main story. Like you know, it to ask questions about other things is to do the goofy thing that all those reporters did at All Out, where like this yes. like news story is occurring in front of them, and you're like, well, what about this MJF face turn that you guys seem to be teasing? like, come on.
You know, the crowd really seemed to react to the Acclaimed this week. Yeah, whistling through the graveyard. Hey, hey, did you see the elephant that's in that room over there? Nah, man.
No way. No elephant over there. No skeletons in those closets. No. Keep moving.
There are no bones and there are no elephants. Ask your questions. Yes, I am very excited to go to the UK someday with AEW.
MJF has a very strong crowd connection that we look to utilize over the next several quarters.
Oh my goodness.
Like, it's the only thing that's interesting about him right now. This is the thing you want to talk to him about. And so,
and this is why you should refuse all interviews if you're not going to talk about anything.
Right. No, right. At the same time, I mean, because it looks stronger to just refuse all these interviews than to go on there and basically no comment your way through that.
What happened to transparency? Screw off. I got guys who are trying to kill each other in the back. I don't care about your damn, I don't care that AEW superfan 63245 isn't getting a soundbite after a show.
I'm still amazed that there hasn't been like an announcement of new locker room backstage rules and policies.
Oh, like, that won't leak for a while, but I'm betting that there might be some there.
Yeah. No, it seems to me like that honestly should leak because it would make Khan look like he's taking charge of this situation. Cause like right now, all of us, as we speculate about it, sort of think that like the background locker room climates or like the rules of the road are sort of more or less still the same.
It should
leak. Nuts.
It should leak, but Andrade hasn't been at TV. Oh my goodness. Comings and goings. The Good Brothers are back at WWE. Yay.
Okay. Well, look, some of us know how to appreciate art in the form of a Luke Gallows match. So there are many of us who are very excited about this news.
Yeah, they're going to do, they teased a Bullet Club reunion, brought them back to fight the Judgment Day. What is sort of interesting, though, is that Carl Anderson is the never open weight champion, but it is expected that, there have been deals made that he will honor his dates and drop that title, but it is sort of intriguing to talk about. What if Papa H put a little bug in New Japan's ear about a working relationship, and everybody right now screaming at their audio devices going, oh no, they only care about WWE, blah 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 blah. I get that, and this is in no way any basis in reality. But
they're not. I don't think a joint super show is imminent on the horizon, Jeff. But I do think that anyone who doesn't think that this sort of diplomatic situation can lead to a thawing of relations and like the pursuit of future business between these two companies is missing. Especially with the failure of NXT Japan. Like, no, I'm
dead serious. Yeah,
I'm dead serious, especially with the failure of NXT Japan to launch. Like, I think maybe Hunter reassesses and goes like, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if we did do some sort of joint show at some point.
And the answer to all your questions is money. And New Japan would love to have some WWE money flowing through their coffers. Don't, AEW money's nice. But hey, I get up from business class to first class over here. So, Forbidden Door was a nice, lovely little pay-per-view. But there's money. Yes, but, that's just reckless speculation at this point. Appearing on...
But other things that could happen is like the licensing of Bullet Club as a name and a property.
Oh, could you imagine? Could you imagine Bullet Club shirts in the WWE shop? Oh
yes,
man.
Money talks, dude.
Money talks. Yeah. God, the amount of vitriol from the internet wrestling community would be insane. Since we tape on Friday evenings, we did not get to this, but Legado del Fantasma appeared on SmackDown, but not with Elektra. I wanted to say it's Elektra Lopez, right?
That's yes, Elektra Lopez.
I almost call her Carmen Elektra. Elektra Lopez. Instead, Zelina Vega taking the place, at least for now. Upgrade, downgrade, or push, Chris?
Push. And I would actually have both of them together.
I kind of like, would too.
Yeah. You have the big one and the small one, and they both work together outside the ring to like cause mischief and help the team win. I think that that's kind of an interesting twist on the manager thing where there's two of them.
Yeah. Far be it for me to say that Elektra Lopez is not a great wrestler. She's good. She's improving. Far be it for me also to say that sex is not a part of wrestling, and that Elektra Lopez brings the sex in Legado del Fantasma and would probably be a welcome addition to this act. Not that Zelina Vega isn't attractive, but having both of them on there where Zelina's more presence than anything in terms of getting heel heat.
Oh, she's a good talker.
Yes.
Yeah, she can be the mouthpiece much better than Elektra. No, I think like them as the dual-headed manager actually makes a lot of sense.
And then over on the AEW side at the Rampage tapings, this will be out before Rampage, so you're not being spoiled, I don't believe, but Matt Taven, Mike Bennett, and Maria showed up. They are
no,
there.
No,
they
yeah, are there. No act more dynamic than those.
I mean, that is like saying we're going out for ice cream and you get vanilla. And that's no offense to any of those three, but it's just we've had them in New Japan. We've had Taven as Ring of Honor champion. We've had Mike Bennett in WWE. We've had Maria a few times. And I see friends of mine who are clamoring for Maria to be in AEW to help this women's division. And I'm just like, how? Well, she'd be a good presence backstage and this and that and the other. I'm like, okay. But work situations are different every time you go in. So there's not that resume that I think people think she has to come in and change things in the women's division necessarily.
No. And the thing that like AEW needs essentially is someone who can have the same level of presence as Britt Baker. Like you need like a top level ringer, which yes. You either have to home grow or you have to buy, and Maria's not either of those.
Yeah, the only person out there right now that could possibly be that person is Sasha Banks, and I don't think she's coming because right. She's having too much fun playing model and actress right now, according to her social media. So, and who knows if she's coming back to WWE at all. I have my doubts. I'm starting to doubt this now, Chris. I really am.
But yeah, outside of Sasha, there's really no one who can come in and sort of do the thing that like, yeah, that roster on that side needs an infusion, but it's like a top level infusion. That's hard.
It's
That's
like
hard.
One person who could take, who wouldn't get absolutely killed by Britt Baker doing her demeaning. Oh, you think that, I mean, you know, you could fight fire with fire and put Charlotte in there, but she's not going to be available. But yes, you know, someone who could hold their own with Britt, both in the ring and out of the ring. And, yeah. And that's an issue for them.
No, and WWE has most of those talents yes. that you would want right now under contract, yes, whether sure. it's Io Shirai or Asuka or you know, Charlotte, Sasha's like, if anything.
Sasha, Becky.
Yeah, like all the people. Yeah, yep. Yep, yeah. Every single one that you would want, WWE has. I just don't know who the get is.
Yeah, pretty much. And we thought Tony might be it, but right now it's not looking that way.
No, right? Yeah, we thought Tony might be it, but they just, no, it's just not happening.
That'll do it for the news part of the show. Now to go to the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Whatever we watched, whatever we saw this week, lots of things to choose from, starting from last Friday to now, including Battle of the Belts, Ice Cold Takes on Extreme Rules, if you so choose, any of the weekly shows. Chris, I will leave it to you to start the conversation.
Hmm. I guess we can do Extreme Rules. You were very down on this show. Take me through your takes on why you were so down on it.
Down is possibly the wrong word in terms of the in-ring work. Because the in-ring work, it was perfectly fine. I described it as exceptionally cromulent.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say, the word cromulent immediately came to mind.
It was fine with the exception of the one thing being hugely above average for me was Sheamus and the Brawling Brutes versus Imperium, which was just absolutely fantastic. And these guys, I could watch them kill each other for hours on end to my own endless amusement, Chris.
Oh, no, that opening match absolutely delivered for me. It was so good. It was what I thought it was going to be and more. And like, yes. I very into this feud. They can keep going.
I mean, I even love some of the little, like I love Kaiser. God, I always forget his name because I want to call him Axel Dieter or I want to call him something else. But Kaiser Wilhelm, is that the name?
Yeah, Ludwig Kaiser.
Ludwig Kaiser, thank you. He just does so many things well in terms of also his selling, because his main goal is to be the guy who everybody kills. So, yeah, he was great. The reason I was down in terms of my talking is because of storytelling in the Raw women's title feud in general between Bianca and Bayley. Again, love me some Aunt Pam. So you will take this criticism to heart, listeners. I don't understand how they blew this story. I really don't. Because you have two generational talents in Io Shirai and Bayley, and you have somebody who's very good in Dakota Kai. You introduce them to massive amounts of heat at SummerSlam. You have Survivor Series planned for later in November. The story here writes itself. Heel group comes in, runs roughshod over all the baby faces, takes all the titles, and becomes a dominant force in the WWE that needs to be stopped and requires a group effort to stop them. It is a very simple story to tell. And yet, Chris, in this ladder match, which I thought was okay, Bianca was getting a bit lost and had to be held by the hand a little bit by Bayley, a little bit too much for my liking for it to be a very good match. But the booking of this match was ridiculous in that Bianca took out both the tag champs and Bayley. Why do we need a War Games involving the...
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They're on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
He's three. If Bianca Belair can just come in and murder death them. And the thing is, this is Vince thinking slash how Triple H was booked. And that worries me a bit about the storytelling in WWE. Because remember, to get Triple H over, they'd always put him in there against the tag champs 2-on-1, and he'd always beat the tag team champs and to make them dominant. It doesn't look. Being dominant doesn't make you good. Being good makes you dominant. And that is the mistake that I think WWE mistakes itself far too much in its storytelling when it's trying to build up feuds, is that we have to make these people seem overpowerful when just being very, very good will make them dominant in and of itself. And I just don't see how... I think damage control is dead, Chris. I really do, as a faction. And I think Io Shirai is starting to give looks to Bayley, like, doubting her as a leader, and we're eventually going to get this contrived turn somewhere.
Yeah, I just it's like they were trying to be too clever here. Bailey needs to win the title off of Bianca. The money with Bianca's in the chase. And you have the faction take over and take control. The tag team already has the belts. The leader of the group should have the belt. Her whole mission in life is to get the belt. And like, what is the point of prolonging this? Why? You know, are we downcycling them already? I don't think we are. I just did not see any wisdom in prolonging.
Yeah,
this.
We don't want to see the chase of the heels. We want to see that. We want to see how they're going to win it, and then once they win it, the money is in the baby faces going after what they've lost and trying to figure out this obstacle that's in front of them. And instead, what we've gotten now is that
a prolonged heel chase, which as I'm trying to like think about what that would book out to be, it's like, what, the heels injure the baby face, and then this time Bailey pins Bianca in a really anticlimactic way and
steals the title, and oh, isn't she dastardly, instead of wow, isn't she good and has help with her. And it's what's the point of beating them in a War Games match though now, because it's just like, well, you know, we've seen Bianca take out three of them. And
she beat the leader too.
Yeah. And let me put it this way. If you want a parallel connection, look at how the Golden Role Models were booked. The Golden Role Models came out, became heels, won those tag titles, won the individual titles, and came out week after week after week and just said, hey, we're here. We're very, very good. Come at us. And it was compelling television. That is how you use a heel group like that. They have the prototype right in front of them, and one of the people that was involved in that feud, and they can't figure that out. And that worries me a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other big thing, I mean, we have to talk about is Bray Wyatt.
Sure.
I think, because the other matches were good. I mean, Edge's... I liked the Edge match, but my God, do they love chewing the scenery? And in this case, the slow chew of the scenery, where it's like, we can tell this story in 10 minutes. We're going to take 25.
Yeah, no, the end of the match went on far too long, but but it was actually not bad. That's the thing, is like, I enjoyed the work in that, but it went on too long.
People are excited for Bray Wyatt, at least people in the WWE. We talked about the hiring of Rob Fee last week. I am now convinced that Triple H thinks that Bray Wyatt is his Undertaker and is going to now book him as such. And this is going to be Mr. Spooky and special effects and things like that, where I don't know. I don't know if people really liked The Fiend. I mean, he was a merchandise machine. Don't get me wrong. I think people really wanted to see how the cult leader type thing. I think people liked Wyatt's promos, and I think those will come here. But the whole, you know, symbolism of the death of the Funhouse, and then the live action characters, which there are rumors of who the Wyatt Six are. I'm starting to think more and more it leans more towards it's the Dyad, the Schism, Grayson Waller, you know, and those people that are doing this with them. I kind of agree, versus main roster people or people that they're bringing back. I think it's a big NXT call up type thing, you know, the contrived, you know, oh, the buzzards in the audience here, the bunny. I don't think people want to see Bray Wyatt and six bad Sid Marty Krofft puppets. You know, live action in suits like Sweetums from the Muppets surrounding him. I think they just kind of want a badass Bray Wyatt with a heel stable kind of being a bad cult leader, as opposed to swamp wizard, horror movie icon Bray Wyatt. But your thoughts on just how they reintroduced him?
Yeah, I think people are ready for a Bray Wyatt that's focused on Bray Wyatt, and I do worry that the Ministry of Swampness is not the right way to go here.
That, and I was going to mention something else here. Bray looks like he's gained about 30 pounds. And not that, how am I going to put that? How am I going to dig out of this hole? Not that big men can't be good workers, and not that they can't move in the ring. He just looked like he had gained a lot of weight while he was off while he was cut.
It didn't look like mobile weight. I'll put it that way. Yes. I'm with you.
Yeah, that and I think I'll expound a little bit on a little bit again what the flagship was saying here. But much like Aleister Black and or slash Malakai Black and how we spoke about him in both AEW and WWE, I think there's going to be certain reins that have been taken off of Bray and his creative instincts here, and I'm not sure Bray's instincts without a guiding hand are good. I think we're going to get more of this supernatural creepy stuff here. And I think it might go a little bit. I mean, we just hired a director of lore in Rob V to help write this type of stuff, which has me a bit concerned. And we know that Bray has some very idiosyncratic hobbies, such as raising miniature horses. I mean, that's a real life thing that he does in his life that are very expensive, and why he probably needed to come back to WWE. So I don't mind creative control, but I think I need a showrunner with a firm hand who will say yes and no, and then the talent will trust him to say, okay, I get your weird creative instincts. I will help guide them. And I'm not sure that Triple H is necessarily the guy who can do that.
No, I share your concerns. I'm very lukewarm on the re-debut right now, but it's super early.
Yeah. I don't have anything. I mean, other than that, you know, the Liv Ronda match was preposterous.
Dreadful. Yeah, preposterous and dreadful and very bad, and Liv should have won that match.
The Fight Pit match, I thought was... It's almost like, hey, how would you normally book a special referee in a match? And hey, we're going to fight against that because that's what everybody else would do. Daniel Cormier did nothing in this match. And I'm just like, well, what was the point of that then?
I know that was the weird part. Like the whole point of that was for him to like push both these guys back.
Yeah.
Sort of loom over them and go like, you're not here to fight me. And then they both back down to him. Right. I thought it made them both look smaller.
Yeah. And I have no other notes on Extreme Rules, so I will defer to you as to the next place we're gonna go.
Okay, let's do a little Dynamite here.
Okay.
We've already. What do we think about the MJF face turn tease thing?
Oh, I don't think it's a face turn, but I did have a question about this because I really really liked this promo. I did. And I like that he is, it's interesting that they've decided to now rush. And we talked about this last week. They decided to rush the firm MJF issues to a head within 2 weeks of each other.
Yeah.
And then when MJF starts cutting his promo, he's fantastic to me when he's cutting it in the camera. Now here's the creative beat. If I was scripting this out that I'd question if he came to me with this promo. The one where where he talks about being a little bit self-loathing. When he looks in the mirror, I hate myself too. And I don't know, do we want self-loathing MJF where he hates himself? Is it a beat of self-realization by the villain? Or do we want someone more like, and I hate to use this because it's just a Mount Rushmore promo, but Ric Flair, where it's like, I get up every morning and I love being me. And I love being evil. And I love being a jerk. Because I know I'm better than you. I mean, that's the other beat I would have had. I would have ended the promo as opposed to generational talent with, I'm better than you and you know it. But I think generational talent might be right on this face turn thing. Even though I think this company needs a major league heel. And I think MJF is it. But you know, the promo overall was spectacular. It was just that was the
I have actually no notes on the promo itself. MJF continues to be quite good. Even like that Wheeler Yuta thing, the issue is not MJF doing his job poorly or anything. It's just that Wheeler Yuta was completely outclassed by a far better, more talented guy. And I thought that this was good again. I do think like we are at least playing the seeds for an eventual face turn for MJF. And it's interesting. It's a move. I think it just doesn't feel like they know, like when they started the pairing of MJF and the firm, I don't think they really knew what they were doing with it. And I think they're like trying to make a story now.
They're trying to make fetch happen.
Yes.
They're trying to catch up to it. We have this idea. This is how we're going to get out of this chip thing on the ladder.
Yeah, this is how we're going to get through this ladder match finish. And then we'll figure out how this makes sense in the intervening weeks. And I mean, time is wearing on.
I could not. Yeah. Okay. I'll get into that point in a second. My other 2 points about Dynamite are fairly quick. Nyla Rose is fantastic on promos. In her social media as well. She might be what the division needs, because I absolutely adored this promo and how she was reacting to people and how she reacted to Anna Jay coming in and challenging her. Her acting chops are big, because I believe she was in the theater scene in the Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia area when she got signed. I enjoyed that. And I'll leave my third one's about the Garcia quote unquote turn. But I'll any comments about Nyla Rose?
No, I'm with you, though. I thought she was actually a fresh presence on here. We'll see how I feel about her when she gets back in the ring. But backstage,
she's co-opted the BITCH thing in her social media, and it's great. I don't know if you saw that tweet, but it's like her social media game is on point and so strong that she might be the one to be able to finally get this division a little bit of a spark. The Daniel Garcia thing was ridiculous.
I thought so too. Good. That's where I was going to go next. It's just he needed to. It just makes no sense whatsoever for him to go back to the Jericho Appreciation Society at this point.
I'm not sure if he is necessarily, but let me pause the naysayers here, because I can hear I've heard everybody break this down and go, well, you know what he did was he realized Jericho was right and that sports entertainers can be professional wrestlers. That doesn't forgive Jericho for hitting him in the head with a belt. I'm sorry, it doesn't. And if they're going to do a story where it's like, okay, Garcia doesn't like being put in the middle of this whole kind of thing, and Yuta doesn't like being a young boy in the Blackpool Combat Club, and they decide to unite together, I'm cool with that as a nuanced story, and I'm willing to go along with it and see how it plays out like that. If he's just going back to the Jericho Appreciation Society, it's a mistake, because it's the same thing we saw with Wardlow, and now even with Jamie Hayter, where it's like people are dying for this person to turn, and you got to give it to them. Otherwise, by the time we get back around to it, it's just not going to be as hot. And to pull this move, I think really, it really kind of chilled him off a little bit, cooled him off a little bit in the eyes of the fans, in terms of now when he becomes face, is he going to be Paul Orndorff, or he's just going back and forth at a whim? I just didn't understand this.
No, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And this just felt like a way of getting Jericho's march through all the former Ring of Honor champions to continue, but not really thinking about the story you've been telling for the last several weeks, or the story you're trying to tell for the next several weeks. Which is to say, this is a sort of week to week sort of move that maybe felt like it made sense in a discrete moment. But yes, you brought up a very good point. Jericho hit Daniel Garcia in the head with a belt. He has done nothing in the intervening weeks to win Daniel Garcia back after that.
Yeah.
The reuniting was completely undeserved. And there's nothing that a promo next week can do to make that make sense. And even if they do, it's going to be just trying to add in plot that hasn't been there in the past several weeks.
I have some unrepentant stupidity to talk about, and it's not just the thing that you know about. Because there was lots of really good unrepentant stupidity in wrestling, and I must give praise to it. Now, I can't talk Chris into this, but I adored the Serpentico-Brandon Cutler match on AEW Dark Elevation. I howled. I laughed. It was so stupid. It was like they decided to rib everybody in AEW to the point where it might be in my top five matches of the year. I know that's overpraise. I know Chris is... I can hear Chris's teeth grinding in my cans right now because he's just watching like, no, this is dumb. I don't like it. I was like, I understand.
If it was a parody of tropes of AEW matches done in a more pointed satirical way, I would be on board with it. But like, I don't know. I don't really feel like they were in on the joke.
It's fine. Nevertheless, I will get to two more stronger instances of unrepentant stupidity that I love, even though one breaks one of my cardinal rules. And that's this one. Sami Zayn and the Usos on Raw, where he goes that Jey Uso lately hasn't been very oosy.
That and when he said yeet, like the way he says yeet is so funny. Like he's very funny. I love those Uso Bloodline segments every week.
I love
they're great.
That Roman loves Sammy now. This is the way that we thought would be more interesting, and it is to me. And I think Sammy,
and Jay keeps screwing things up.
Yes, I think Sammy's a little bit too over the top here for my liking at times, but I get it. It has to be played big like this. I'd kind of like him to calm down and realize he's annoying everybody while doing it. But at the same time, I kind of don't want him to stop doing that because the fact that this thing got over is so amazing in its own self, because most people would just turn on this as stupid, but it's so damn brilliant that I absolutely adore this.
It makes his matches really fun too, because they become this sort of bizarro world where he wrestles as a heel, but everyone reacts to him as a babyface. But weirdly, yes, in the context of the story that they are telling, it makes perfect sense. Yes. And so yes, it makes for a very fun break in the continuity of the show. I enjoy this stuff a lot right now.
And then over on NXT, Chris, I have to bring this up because this is so unrepentantly stupid, and it was even more stupid that it got brilliant. Y'all know my theory on Kiana James and her character. Kiana James lives in a 90s porno world where there's no sex. Kiana James and her buxom assistant, I don't believe they've given her an on-screen name, but her name is Giovanna Borneo in real life. A judoko from Brazil with certain enhancements that men love, which fits into the Brazzers narrative. Well, Chris, Kiana James is going to buy the land on which Chase U is built to take Chase U away from it. This is such 80s cheeseball comedy that I half want Chase U to say, we need to put on a show to save the university.
Now, I want Mr. Chase Goes to Washington.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. But Chris, I think it gets even better because I think they may go hardcore into the porno world. And I think, don't get me wrong, I don't think there's going to be anything on screen or anything like that. But I think either Mr. Andre Chase or Bodie.
Bodie
is
Bodie.
Gonna be seduced by one.
Bodie
of these
gets
women.
No,
Bodie
Keanu
is be seduced.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Keanu seduces Bodie. Yeah, or the secretary seduces Bodie.
Oh my god, it's gonna be pornolicious, and it's gonna be fantastic. It's fantastically bad. Miss James, a Bodie is here to see you.
But this Andre Chase character, it really works. It's a good character. It's fun.
I kind of want to see Kiana and Giovanna be the cure of the intermittent rage issues of Andre Chase. But I think Bodhi's the call here, and it puts a schism in between her and Thea, who is fantastic. Here, I just. Hey, Kiana.
She's, yes, no. Thea's also very good. Like, no, the thing about the Chase U act is that Bodhi is very good at this character, and Thea is very good at her character.
And Andre's very good at his character.
No, I know. Yeah, like the reason it works is because all three of these people are playing their characters at like 10 out of 10 levels right now.
Do you have anything on NXT? Because I have a couple more things if you wanted to.
It is the Stax Lorenzo thing is like really funny to me. Like the promo in the back with Tony and Stax cracked me up. Like, who am I fighting? I'll fight anyone. Trying to think. I also enjoyed Pretty Deadly. Pretty Deadly doing the grandstanding.
Go sports.
Go sports. Like, yes.
I don't like Booker T on commentary. But the moment Grayson Waller hit the sidekick and you hear Booker T under his breath go, "What the hell was that?"
He was really bad all throughout the show. My favorite was when he inexplicably went heel on Idris Enofi and Malik Blade. To the point where like Vic is kind of like trying to reel him back in, sort of like, I don't really know how to play off of this, dude. You need to stop.
You're ruining it because they already have a dumb gimmick where one guy just wears a sweater vest and the other guy's an athlete. They have no real gimmick other than being dumb. And this is the type of thing that Booker T lays into because he hates characters like this that don't have any motivation. So he thinks he's pushing them in some way, in terms of pushing them to come up with something or do something. And he's not, it's kind of bearing this, and in other bad turns, but I found the unrepentant stupidity of it great. Roddy Strong doing the Ron Wright thing in the hospital. If this has been a ruse the entire time and he put himself in a hospital for a few weeks just to get at the diamond mine, this is method acting we haven't seen since James Dean, Chris.
Yeah, don't think about it too hard, but yeah.
What kind of quacks are at this hospital that don't see that Roddy's faking this whole thing?
I like Valentina Ferois. She yells a lot, but I like her.
Well, I'm here for Veer and Sangha.
Yeah, Veer and Sangha, like them reunited as well.
I think they should be baby faces, though. A baby face monster team, which sounds preposterous. But how are you gonna boost Sangha?
Especially at this point. But yeah, like other things. JC Jane, I like the kind of style that she was working in this match, where she was trying to fight Alba Fire straight up. Like, she wasn't like a scared heel or like I'm gonna cheat or whatever. She like tried to fight Alba Fire straight up.
Yeah,
got overpowered, but like that's the right match style for her.
Yeah, my other notes are backtracking to AEW. So my one note was this is what I'd say. I watched a little bit of AEW Dark because I watched the women's match, and there's a very good six-woman squash on there. And if I'm Jamie Hayter, I'd go to Tony Khan and I'd say, pay whatever you need to get Brittany Blake on a show on Wednesday, and then I'd slip Brittany Blake another 100, because Brittany Blake made Jamie Hayter look like Vader on AEW Dark. She just looked like a power person killing this poor, like Vader beating up a Mulky. That's how well Brittany Blake made Jamie Hayter look like $1 million. If they were ever going to try and get Jamie over as a babyface singles act, the first match I'd book would be her versus Brittany Blake as just a total squash, and she would be over like Rover, in my opinion.
Okay.
And Emi Sakura just is the queen of AEW Dark. She just chops the crap out of people. Go watch her. Oh, yeah. One other. Did you get to watch Battle of the Belts at all?
A little bit. Yeah. Well.
I thought Jade Cargill had her best match with Willow Nightingale. I just don't think you can. We were saying that maybe Willow should beat Jade, but she's already lost to Jade 3 times now. We got to build the 4th time up now. The 3rd time should have been the charm, right? Willow gets a great reaction. Don't get me wrong.
But just, no, it boggles the mind that this Jade thing has gone this long with no clear end game.
There were end games, but they were ruined. You know, right. it was Statlander, and then they had no plan B, and now they're looking around going, okay, who's going to be this person?
And if Shafir hadn't laid an egg, like, Shafir was built the right way, but, like, obviously that was a dud.
It might be Nyla. It might be Nyla now that I think they may just go through with it, have her dump the baddies, and make Jade a babyface and see what they have in her. Would that be the way to go here?
I don't know, because I kind of think, like, eventually you, like, don't want to have Jade and Hayter on the same side of the roster. One of them should be a babyface, and one of them should be heel.
That's very, very true. And then all you have is Britt.
Right. No, I mean, there are certain people in the division who would like that, but, like, no, I think if you're going, what is the AEW roster of tomorrow look like? It's got to be Hayter and Jade as the two pillars of it, with Baker as, you know, like, the very important 1A.
Chris has to get to a gig, so we're going to end there. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at DWATG. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I am on Fight Game Media, patreon.com/fightgamemedia for $5 a month. I do the Dynamite Show with Paul Fontaine, Hot Takes on AEW, where we go granular on AEW Dynamite every week. That might not be for some people, so I just bring the hits over here and do them on Shake Them Ropes. Chris also does other projects, but I think is Don't Worry on hiatus?
Yeah, kind of right now. You can still go and sub up at patreon.com/DWATG. When I get back to doing it, your buck a show will go to me, and you will get a new podcast and the video version of it. If you want guitar lessons, go to instagram.com/Dr_Nove, DOCTOR_Nove. You can message me on Instagram for guitar lessons, or keep up with all of my musical going-ons over there.